Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Tomorrowland.
Today!
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, hi, hi.
Out Now is a film podcast, where Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 193.
I think that adds up to 13, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you got that.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Lincoln Elementary.
And this week's podcast, we're talking about Tomorrowland. It's a nice change in pace, Abe. We've had a lot of movies that have colons in them, and we like saying the colons, but this is a nice, straightforward title, Tomorrowland.
I think we should just thank Brad Bird for that, too. Yeah, he could have gone crazy, Ghost Protocol, but, you know.
Tomorrowland, colon, the Space Mountain Adventure, past Autopia. That's...
colon, Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, Ghost Protocol fits in there. Anyway, joining us today, we have from veryaware.com, she is in search of dreamers, it's Courtney Howard.
Hi, everybody.
And from slashfilm.com, after a long hiatus, he has landed back on the show after traveling by jetpack. It is Jermaine Lucier.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me back, Aaron and Abe.
You're welcome. And
welcome. Thank you. Wow, that was very cordial.
How are you two doing today?
Great. Obviously, yeah. Jermaine is outdoing me.
Right, if I'm watching VH1 Classics on this fine morning. But yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. I'm ready to... talk about Tomorrowland. I've been talking about it all weekend with friends, and I'm excited to see what you guys have to say about it.
For sure. Yeah. Well, that's I was going to say sunny. It's not that sunny, but it's a nice Memorial Day weekend. We figured, why not? Let's get into this. Let's talk about some Brad Bird, Clooney bombs.
Definitely.
See how things go. So, before we get started here, let's do a few show notes. Not too much. iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show, helps other people find our show. Of course, you can log on to iTunes, add a quick rating, and or review, very simple to do, unintentional rhyme, and just help us out, right, Abe?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much in advance.
Let's see. Congratulations to Scott Mendelson after weeks of chiding him for ducking our podcast before he came on last week. He, because of his child is now born, so I can no longer say unborn child. but no, congratulations to Scott Mendelson. Yeah, he and his wife, they've added another little one to their clan. So, friend of the show, good to see good things happening.
Congratulations, Scott.
What else? Abe, we did our and Jermaine, you're familiar with these. You guys do the summer box office challenge over with.
Yes, we do.
Formerly on the tour with Totally Rad Show, but that's no longer. But you guys are put it over onto Slash Film now. But yeah, we also do a similar thing, and what the news with that is that Pitch Perfect 2 has just basically messed up a lot of our rankings. I'm aware of that. It made another like $30 million this weekend. It's clearly going to be a big hit, and I'm pretty sure only Adam Gentry and Peter Paris, they correctly put them in their top 10. And yeah, that's gonna.
It's not even
things.
In my dark horse, I don't think.
I think Jose was the only one that had it in his dark horses among you. Jermaine, did you have it in yours at all?
I had it in my dark horses. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. See, I stuck with Entourage. I weighed the two, and I was like, Entourage, baby.
I like that movie, but that movie's not going to make any money. It's not very good. I shouldn't even say that, but hopefully this comes out after the embargo. But if it doesn't, Warner Brothers, I'm lying.
Oh, no. That's that's disheartening in many ways. Every season of Entourage ends with Vinny and the boys that are going to be all right, and I don't know if that's going to be the case this time around.
Right. No, if you like the show, you're going to like the movie.
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine. Not, I feel like Sex and the City fans say the same thing.
Yes.
But, that said, I can still hold out that there will be like a secret Sex and the City 3 teaser with the Entourage movie.
Yeah. I'll tell you what you can't hold out for is that it's going to make the top 10 of the summer.
I weighed the chances, and I'll deal with the consequences. But, yeah.
You're a man of honor, sir.
I tried to make a good top 10. It is a dark horse. It's not like I was riding on Entourage the movie. But anyway, moving on. That's show notes stuff. Let's get into it, Abe. Let's do a little know for body where each week we ask each other some questions to the panel and try to set the tone for the podcast we better get to.
Know everybody.
All right. Abe, why don't you start this one off?
Sure. When you guys were kids, was there one invention that you thought really could have worked that you designed?
That you designed?
Yeah. I almost really thought that jetpack shoes would have worked because I was like third grade or something.
But did you design jetpack shoes?
No, I mean like on paper and pencil, with paper and pencil, yes.
Wow. I definitely think I probably tried to invent something at some point as a kid, but nothing is like ringing a bell. The only thing that I remember that has nothing to do with invention, but I tried to do it as a kid was write the script to Batman 3 after Batman Returns came out.
What?
And I
knew exactly wait, like the way that Batman Forever worked out.
Stop. Wait. We need to go into this.
So yeah, but I don't remember anything about it. I just remember drawing the bat symbol on the front of a notebook, expecting to fill the notebook, getting about a half a page down, and then giving up. And so ended the end of my screenwriting days.
Did you have any villains in mind?
I don't remember. I don't think I did. I think I was like, Batman is in the Batcave. This sucks. And then just left it go. But yeah, inventions.
I feel like we've Jermaine. Sorry.
No, I feel I just have some weird thing in my head with like a toilet paper roll. I don't remember what I did with it. Maybe some sort of telescope something. I don't know. I have no good answer to this
question. Telescoping toilet paper roll. I like that.
There you
go. Yeah, well, you're in the toilet. Comma, you take the toilet paper roll and you know you get the telescopes out and you can look across the room.
Something to that in effect, yeah, I guess.
Courtney, do you have anything?
No inventions, I don't think. I know my brothers were super into like trying to invent something because they were little entrepreneurs, but I don't think I really invented anything. I mean, I wanted like, you know, flying cars to exist by this point, but you know, who didn't?
Yeah,
but I didn't really invent anything. I just wasn't equipped that way.
I feel like I've answered a question like this before, Abe, when the last time we had a movie about, I guess, dreamers or inventors, whatever that would have been. Maybe Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Probably, yeah.
But I feel like it was just like stuff like Doc Brown stuff that like helps you get around the house or get you through your day quicker. Like, hey, there's a thing that rolls into a thing, and then your coffee gets made.
I thought you were referring
kind of
to something to read someone else's mind, so you built this giant thing to put on your head.
No, more along the lines of like an omelet that makes itself, and like a giant clock setup that is elaborate for no reason. But anyway, my question, much simpler: what's your favorite Brad Bird movie?
Incredibles.
Yeah, probably Incredibles. Though I recently rewatched Ratatouille, and that's a movie that, though won the Oscar for Best Animated Film along with Incredibles, does not get the love it deserves.
Doesn't seem like it does, right? It seems like and I'm the same way. I don't rewatch Ratatouille very often, but when I do, it's like this movie's amazing.
I think I was watching it again, and I said the moment spoilers for Ratatouille, in the words of Dave Chen, the moment when the critic eats the ratatouille and it goes into his eyes and becomes a cot chit kid again. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the best moment in any Pixar movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hands down, there's probably not a better one. And watching it again, you're like, damn, Brad Bird, this is a movie that you didn't even want to make. You know, he sort of came on late.
I mean, you didn't
late.
Like the part where the shark puts on Woody's hat and says, I'm Woody, howdy, howdy, howdy?
That's my second place. Thank you for that. That was exactly what I was going to point out.
But at the same time, yeah, I mean, like, as a fan of action and superheroes and a family and all that kind of stuff, I mean, yeah, The Incredibles, it's tough.
Yeah, man. The stakes are real in that one.
Yeah.
Courtney?
Yeah, I would say The Incredibles, but I do like that moment in Ratatouille a lot. I still can't – it's still hard for me to kind of get around a rat in the kitchen, but, you know, it's a fun movie. I really like the whole critic scene because that, you know, eclipses – that speaks to us as the film critic as well. Whenever we see a movie where it's like, oh my God, I'm a kid again. That's really good.
I'm with Incredibles, but Iron Giant, I watch quite a bit. So it's like, it's incredible. It's just, it's smarter. It's in what it's doing. There's a lot of various layers in there and the way it subverts certain things. But I mean, Iron Giant, he has a fantastic filmography for the most part, but we'll get to that. But,
yes.
And let's not deny Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. No, it's not necessarily as good as the other ones that we mentioned, but Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol is a very fun action movie.
It is very fun, yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's just got this sense of wonder, and then no matter what you guys, what any of us think of Tomorrowland, there's no denying that he goes for that again, you know, and succeeds to varying degrees, I'm sure. But Yeah, and The Iron Giant, again, is even more underrated, I'm sure, than Ratatouille. I mean, in recent years, because the internet has become a lot more popular.
It's a cult classic now. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, that's, again, a movie that I saw when it came out and liked, and then saw again probably 2 years ago, and I was just like, holy crap, I forgot how good this is. And it almost, I mean, it just, it gets better and better and better every time you see it, because like you said, Aaron, you just, you find so many other things to love about it. I mean, yeah, just a great one. But again, I think I was a little older when The Incredibles came out, a little more seasoned in the way of film, and that was sort of my thing, you know, became like, you know, that was my jam.
What's neat is that, and well, I probably think we'll probably get to this when we talk about Tomorrowland, it feels like no one really wants to down talk Brad Bird in the way, like, I guess people want to get defensive about Nolan, or other people, you know, want to kind of ride on Christopher Nolan, where Brad Bird seems like you want to like him. Like, I don't know what that is, but you seem to want to like Brad Bird.
Well, it's because Brad Bird, you know, is out there, is talking to people. He's on Twitter. He does press interviews.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan,
yeah.
You know, where Christopher Nolan has this more mysterious persona, and Brad Bird is out there enjoying stuff. You know that Brad Bird's a fan of the Golden State Warriors, you know, like you know a lot about him, and that personalizes him, and that sort of makes you – feel a little bit more about him. So even, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, so I think you're more akin to relate to him in that way.
I mean, but that's because Chris Nolan is an auteur.
Right.
I don't know.
Brad Bird's more of like an accessible, like, everyday man, kind of a, you know, you can kind of relate to the emotions that he puts across on the screen. Whereas Nolan's kind of cold. It's hard to get a read from him. I mean, I like Christopher Nolan movies. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Do not say you didn't like. Do not, even if you don't say that, because, you know, the hate tweets will keep it coming.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
No, if you ever badmouth Christopher Nolan, he's got the cult of Nolan will attack.
Wow.
I'd like to think that even while we're talking about this, Nolan's at like a bar right now watching like some football game, and he's just having a gas of a time.
He's like people sitting in
the most jovial guy in England. He just goes out and hangs out at pubs.
I have to think he hangs out with like a really obscure crew. It's like him and like Harry Dean Stanton and like some random third party I can't nail off the top of my head as quickly. they just hang out.
Ron Perlman there for whatever reason.
Maybe. I picture him though in a dark room lit by fire reading a book. That's it. Like, it's just a huge epic room. That's
he goes to a very specific pub that like a very specific pub that only has like a whale oil candles. Like, there's no electricity in there. Just reading the book, and there's like old ale. What are we talking about? Let's move on.
Now
I just want to know who Christopher Nolan rolls with.
That's the name of our spinoff podcast. Who Nolan rolls with? It'll be just a.
It's premiere next week.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. That was how you play.
No, everybody.
Okay, moving on. Let's get out now, quickies.
TM.
Each week on Out Now, we have one movie of the week that we talk about. We just have the movies that we see during the week. That's always 7 o'clock on Out Now, quickies.
TM.
You know what? I was very proud of that one. I did.
That was pretty good. I think that I actually audibly heard everything in that sentence.
If you slow it down, which I'm sure many people do with this podcast, you would have heard every single word of that. Jermaine, I know you've seen many movies, some that you may be able to talk about, some that you can't. What's one movie that you can talk about that you'd like to talk about right now?
Wow. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. This week was extremely busy, and I did see Entourage twice. I can't exactly speak about it. And the other movie I saw this week was Tomorrowland, which we're going to speak about. So I'm kind of a waste in this thing this week. It's been really, really busy. So
not as much as me, man. Don't worry.
Yeah, so I'm going to pass, unfortunately. That's what I do. Ah! It's been a terrible week for movie watching.
Have you like rewatched anything randomly? Like, that's not new, perhaps?
Well, you know, like I said, we watched Ratatouille a little bit, so I already blew that thing. And that was on TV one night. I watched Back to the Future last night a little bit. Yep. I mean, why? You can always talk about Back to the Future. Every time I watch that movie, I'm amazed about how I think literally perfect the screenplay is, where every single scene builds to the next scene, has tension, and moves the story forward. Like, you can watch it and diagram the movie, and it's like, oh my god, I can't believe how good this is. And then you watch another movie after it, even two, and you're like, oh well, this scene is in there because it's kind of cool, but it doesn't really do anything. Where the first one is like note for note perfection.
It's definitely a film that has the kind of structure of a screenplay where there's very little fat on it. Like, there's nothing that doesn't contribute to like either the plot or the, I guess, comedy. And it's just like a kind of a masterclass in how to make an entertaining film.
Yeah, it really is. It is, and if you ask anybody, you know, like, what are some of the great screenplays of all time, you're going to be like, oh, Chinatown and Citizen Kane or Casablanca. And if you said Back to the Future, you'd get laughed away. But I think give it, I mean, it's only been 30 years. Give it another 15, 20 years, and they're going to be like, oh, I'm Back to the Future. I mean, it's definitely, it's that good, I think.
Courtney.
What have I been watching? Well, I just watched Slow West, which I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too.
That was a Western I'd been looking for. We've had some Westerns come out over the past, like, year or so that haven't been nearly as good. But this one was very well done.
Yeah, this is a film with Michael Fassbender and Cody Smit-McPhee.
And Ben Mendelsohn.
And Ben Mendelsohn. Oh,
okay. In a magnificent, like, giant coat that I think sort of outstages him.
The coat was played by Scoot McNairy.
That's hilarious.
He would do that. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He could do no wrong, Scoot McNairy.
Yeah.
And I was going to watch, actually, Big Game last night, but...
Which one's Big Game?
Big Game is with Samuel L. Jackson.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, that and one, yeah,
plays,
yeah.
Yeah, he plays the president of the United States, and Air Force One goes down in the mountains, and this 12-year-old or whatever Finnish boy has to get him out of the mountains. But meanwhile, there's somebody who was the one who rigged, you know, Air Force One to go down, and he's being pursued and hunted down.
So it's The Edge meets Dave by way of The Hunger Games.
Sure. But, and so much more. So I was going to watch that, but then I heard that they didn't, it's a DirecTV exclusive, and the DirecTV exclusive doesn't have Finnish subtitles. So
well, that doesn't help.
And half of the movie is that spoken language, and since nobody really speaks Finnish, it's kind of hard to get a translation. So I didn't wind up ordering that. So until that film is fixed.
How could they even do that? That's ridiculous. Here's the movie. It's not finished.
They make your own subtitles. So, you know, you could just play along. It's an interactive movie that way.
And it's supposed to be with subtitles because people who saw it at Toronto Film Festival, they got subtitles. So I'm not exactly sure why this – they probably just have a bad – DirecTV probably just has a bad copy.
That makes but, so little sense to me. You wouldn't get the subtitles.
Those pirated copies.
And like, you know, it wasn't actually Fred warned me because he was going to watch it anyways. But he started before I did. And he was like, half of this movie is in Finnish. And I was like, what? How can that be? That's a weird stylistic choice.
And when I assume you say it's half is in Finnish, that means that Samuel L. Jackson learned Finnish and the other cast learned English and only he speaks Finnish. That makes sense, right? Obviously.
Obviously. So he was the one who alerted me to the problem. But apparently some other people I've seen on Twitter have had the same problem. So until that gets fixed, I won't be watching that movie, which is unfortunate because I really want to see that movie.
Yeah,
so that's it.
Abe?
I just watched a bunch of Jimmy Kimmel clips. Pass.
Okay. Always the prep you do for this show that you co-host with me weekly is insane. That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple things, and Courtney, I believe you also saw Poltergeist.
I did.
That's... I was gonna see that, and then I read your reviews, both you and Courtney.
Yeah,
I'm like
that,
all right.
That is a movie that I watched. I imagine we're all big fans of the original Poltergeist.
Yes. Yeah. And
it still scares me.
I rewatched the first one again right after the new one, mm-hmm. and obviously the original is still the best one, but it's not quite as perfect as I remember. Like, there's some lulls in energy. It gets kind of boring and kind of weighed down a little bit in the middle, and then it, like, of course, like, perks right back up into the scares. But the thing that just confounds me is I still, after seeing the new one, I don't understand... Besides just keeping the rights to the movie, like, I don't understand why they even bother remaking it when they don't really add anything to it. And the stuff that they add to it just felt like putting a hat on what's already there. So,
yeah, it's a pretty lackluster film, and it's unfortunate because it has a lot of good people behind it. Like, I'm a big,
yeah.
I mean, we're big fans of Sam Rockwell. I think Rosemary DeWitt is like.
Did he dance in the movie?
He didn't dance in the movie.
He did not dance.
That's probably why it's not that good.
So yeah, I was watching. I was like, I got halfway through. I was like, I feel like he's not going to dance. And obviously, you know, there was no payoff. Like, there's no. I feel like most movies with Sam Rockwell should end with him on the side of the credits as they're scrolling up with him dancing. Like, if
yeah, like Beetlejuice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like Beetlejuice. Yeah, most movies should have either Lydia floating in the air, moving her head around with Harry Belafonte playing, or Sam Rockwell dancing. Those are just two things that make sense to me. But regardless, yeah, there was no. It has Sam Rockwell, it has Jared Harris in there, who is a little bit of an odd choice to replace Zelda Rubinstein, but yeah. Whatever. And Gil Keenan, who did Monster House, which Abe, you and I are big fans.
I mean, fans of that.
I think most people that've seen Monster House, it's just underseen.
The kid who plays their son looks like the kid from Monster House.
Yeah, but
the kid who plays the son is really good in the movie.
I agree. Yeah.
And it's kind of, he's the MVP of the film, in my opinion.
Easily. He has an arc. Like, everyone else is just like, hey, yeah, this is who I am. He's like, he has an arc.
Yeah, and he's great. Like, I wish they had maybe stuck with his perspective the entire time. Like, if you're going to redo it, do something a little different. But unfortunately, they didn't. And it's so weird, too, because the original film is PG, and as everybody can attest, it is totally scary.
Yeah.
And you don't remember that it's PG. You think it's R in your head because it's so scary. And this new one's PG-13, and it doesn't – there's no – like – there's no scare that's memorable in that movie that I was like, oh.
I would say, like, the drill scene is, like, fun. I think that's a fun,
it's
like,
fun.
Intense kind of scene for this kind of movie, which is, you know, it's neat because I remember, like, Sam Rockwell says, like, it's more of a family film. And, like, that's what Poltergeist is. That's what kind of makes it different in its own way, where, like, the first act is more of, like, the horror stuff. And then, the second half really is more of like, hey, now the family's dealing with the girl missing and whatnot. Like, it while it's still kind of scary at times, but this, yeah, this talk too much about Poltergeist. It's not that good. I also saw Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. I enjoyed that. I feel like what's it? Perks of Being a Wallflower is a movie that kind of. A lot of people like that movie a lot. I like that movie. I don't love that movie the same way. I don't revere it, I guess, in the same way that a lot of people do. I think I like this one a little bit more, but that's me.
That's my favorite movie this year so far.
Oh, yeah?
But I also saw it at Sundance. So it has that Sundance sheen on it. Uh-huh. I was the world premiere, which, if you've never been to Sundance, every movie you see there is better, even the really bad ones. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to see that again in a couple weeks, and looking forward to seeing if it holds up, because I loved it. I really did. I thought it was so so emotional and so well made and so sort of, you know, against the grain. Riser right now is my favorite movie this year. But again, like I said, that who knows if it'll hold up. Beast of the Southern Wild is a good movie that did not hold up from the reaction I had at Sundance. And that happens to a lot of movies, like I said. But
Fair enough, we'll see.
But I really like that movie, and I'm glad that the Searchlight is giving it a push, a lot of screenings, a lot of people are getting a chance to see it, and I think they're going to like it, and hopefully it'll be a nice little hit.
Yeah, I'd hope it to be, too. I liked it quite a bit in that it had this kind of, like, with these kind of movies, with these kind of, like, indie high school teenager movies, like, this one had that kind of, like, that film edge to it, given that the kids are, you know, filmmakers, and they do a lot of references to not just, like, movies, but, like, really, like,
so it's, like
classic
Super 8,
movies.
But a little bit better?
Yeah, less monsters. Only like 3 or 4 monsters. No, but like it had some stuff that like tied into like things that I like specifically, as opposed to like, hey, I should just appreciate this because it's a witty screenplay or what have you. So
yeah, okay.
But I dug it. All right, I think that's enough quickies.
Yep.
Let's move on now. Let's get to trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, and what have you. And this, just after I said Tomorrowland was a nice streamlined title, here we go with this. So this week we're talking The Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. And that is a, is it the? Is that really the movie that we have going?
Yeah, it's The Scorch Trials.
Well, because the book is called The Scorch Trials, because people who read books can understand that, you know, it's a different title. But people who watch movies can't understand. So it's the Twilight Saga, New Moon, it's the Divergent series, this, it's the Hunger Games, this, as opposed to just being Catching Fire. Movie audiences are stupid, the title version.
I like how they didn't even try to do anything with The Maze Runner besides just put a colon in front of it. It's not The Maze Runner Saga. It's not The Maze Runner Lapse.
The thing is stupid is that, like, the Maze Runner is the title of the first movie very specifically for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, there's no maze in this one. It's the Scorch Trials. It's about them in a place called the Scorch.
Well,
so to call it the next one, I hope, is called The Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, whatever the third title is.
Yeah, exactly. Put it all. It's a build a title.
Planet Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what's his name? Carcetti or Littlefinger, depending on which show you know Aidan Gillen from.
Yes, exactly. I was like, oh, look, there's Mayor Carcetti.
Yeah, he's like, hey, you thought The Maze was just the beginning? I don't know, whatever he says. Anyway, this is the sequel to The Maze Runner, if you didn't realize that already. The film follows these kids outside of the maze, and what happens next? Spoilers, they escape the maze in the first film. And, yeah, now they have to survive the Scorch, whatever that is. And we'll see. So with that said, Courtney, what did you think of the trailer for The Maze Runner: The Scorch Trials?
When the trailer came into my email inbox, I was like, oh yeah, that's a movie that's happening. I don't know. I'm on the fence. It's going to be interesting to see what they do when, given Mad Max is so like practical effects with like desert stuff. Mm-hmm. And the first Maze Runner was not into practical effects really at all. It was all CG stuff.
But Dylan O'Brien's arm swinging around in that first one made it look like he was in a maze.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the cast a lot. I think the cast is all really solid. But if your material isn't there, I'm not sure. I don't know. I didn't read the book, so I don't know how this is going to be. But once they get out into the Scorch, if they can make this narrative different at all from Hunger Games or Divergent, which is basically still Hunger Games, like, I don't know. I had to go back and remember and reread my review for The Maze Runner to be like, oh, yeah. Oh, I guess this is what happens. But maybe I hope this ties up some of the logic questions I have. I don't think it's going to, but I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. If it's good, great. But I don't really have any faith in it because I didn't really love the first one.
Jermaine?
I kind of do like the first one. I felt like I went in with no expectations, and as somebody who likes Lost and stuff, it sort of had that vibe to it. And I mean, I kind of love the maze structure. So once you get out of the maze, it all automatically seems less exciting.
Yeah.
Now we're in a big desert. We just keep walking for 2 hours, but it's not what it is, obviously. But so the trailer didn't really do much for me, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next with these characters. I was also on the set of this movie, and it seems like, from what I've heard, again, I haven't read the books either, it definitely takes the story in a bunch of different ways, where I think it feels almost different from those other properties you mentioned, Courtney, in that it's like there's a different structure on each one, you know, almost like Harry Potter-ish, where, like, you know, one is the Triwizard Tournament and one is the Order of the Phoenix. This one's like, well, this is the maze and now we got to do the Scorch and the next one will be whatever, you know. There's a different, like, sheen on it, a different structure, a different goal, as opposed to, you know, like, oh, will Bella be whatever, or, you know, can we take down the Capitol? And I like Hunger Games. But at the same time, so I think this trailer, it is a trailer, didn't really do much for me. But I think they have – Wes Ball has a much bigger stick to play with on this one, a much bigger budget, a much bigger story to tell. So I am cautiously optimistic about the Maze Runner : The Scorch Trials : the sequel.
Abe?
There's another :
No, there's not.
There will be.
Soon.
On the IMAX poster, there will be.
: in large format theaters.
Yeah.
This trailer is interesting because, like Jermaine, I'm not really sold on it per se, but I did like the first movie, and I think that's because
the three of us we're just ganging up because we're all boys against Courtney.
No, you know,
the three of us seem to enjoy
YA novel, guys. We finally got
finally the boys got something.
Good old Yearling Books Publishing is really rolling in dough right now.
Listen, the first 20 minutes of the first movie are great.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
You don't know where you are. It's all sound. You're just as confused as him. But once they get into it, I was like, meh, okay, here we are again.
I like that Will Poulter.
And
yeah.
I like him singing CLC. But the first one was just good because there was that string of young adult movies that you and I were watching, Aaron, and they weren't very good. And so I went with this one with low expectations, and I was just pleasantly surprised. It wasn't extremely alarmingly good, but it was much better. And then when I walked out of the theater, I asked some people if that was the end of the movie, because it seems to end on a fairly well done closeout.
That's like part of, I think, some of what I enjoy, where it's like it's very closed off until like the last 5 minutes, where they're like, oh yeah, by the way, here's like the sequels setting
yeah.
up like stuff.
And what I also enjoyed about it is that they actually do off with some of the characters, even though they're teenagers. And again, I'm interested in what it's going to build upon, and I hope that Min-ho does finally get to go out with Kimmy Schmidt. But but at the end of the day, I'm cautiously optimistic as well, although I don't want to get my hopes too high, because then I'd be like, ah, damn it. That's where they fell, because they thought that they were...
because they didn't get Kimmy Schmidt.
Right, they could fly too close to the sun.
I agree with both of you guys, where I liked it more than... I liked the first one more than I thought I would, and this one looks like the second act of Stallone's Judge Dredd, where they're just in the desert and there's like cannibals around and stuff. That's the reference that I go for with these movies. This is the kind of thing where it makes me wish that Maze Runner was a Lionsgate property, so we could eventually get some kind of Avengers-style team-up movie between Maze Runner, Divergent, and The Hunger Games, and whatever else. I guess Twilight falls into that one, because that could be more epic than whatever the finale of these movies are going to be, because I don't really seem to care about the... where this story goes. I'm just more like, all right, there's more of this. I kind of liked one of them, so we'll see. But I mean, yeah, opposed to Insurgent and Divergent and Allegiant, I guess, Allegiant is the next Allegiant Part One. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm by default more excited about this movie, because it's like, all right, I'm curious what else besides when you have a movie that presents a giant maze, I'm not sure how you make a second movie that doesn't have something as gimmicky. I don't know what the Scorch Trials means, where it's like, wow, that's just as interesting as seeing people trapped in a labyrinth.
I mean, I like Courtney's Scotch Trials. That's pretty
neat.
Yeah.
What if they just end up going to a bar with Chris Nolan?
friend of the show, David Bax from Battleship Retention, he insisted that there's going to be a character named Trials, Scorch Trials. So I hope that's something that packs in there. But yeah, I have no idea, but I'd like to hope that it at least is something, you know, worthwhile, because why would I want to watch into a movie that's, you know, not worthwhile? So there you go. The Maze Runner: The Scorch Trials opens September 18th in regular and large format theaters. So we'll see. So yeah, all right, that's trailer talk. Let's move on now. Let's get to our main film review for Tomorrowland.
Who are you?
What you saw was a place where the best and the brightest people in the world came together to actually change it. We've been looking for someone like you for a very long time.
Why? Did something happen over there? Something bad?
They followed you here?
Who?
Come on! Get in!
How is this a good idea?
One way in. They know we're coming, so follow me.
Of all the people, why me?
He thinks you can fix the future.
Okay, that should have been some of the trailer for Tomorrowland. This is the second live-action film from writer-director Brad Bird, who's joined by Damon Lindelof this time around. It presents the idea of a secret world of technology discovery existing, and the folks who have had a chance to be a part of it. For various reasons, young Casey Newton, played by Britt Robertson, must team up with a grizzled Frank Walker, played by George Clooney, in an effort to go back to Tomorrowland and essentially save the world. Jermaine, what were your thoughts on Tomorrowland?
I was disappointed. I really, it was a movie I was very, very much looking forward to, just because of everything you just said. I love the cast. I love the people who were behind it. And the idea of it just sounded so great. I think there's some really strong stuff in there. Watching the movie, it presents so many great, cool ideas and so many interesting little set pieces and asides that I kept thinking about them. And the story just kept moving without ever giving me a chance to explore the sort of world they created. And the questions and problems kept piling up for me. subconsciously almost. So it's to a point where I walked out of the movie and a lot of people said they really liked it. And I almost felt like I'd been like stuffed, like with food. I couldn't even like think. I couldn't function. I'm like, what did I think of that movie? And then I started to talk it out a little bit. And I started saying like, well, then why did this happen if that happened and this and that? And I'm not somebody who needs everything explained. I'm a person who tends to believe that if the movie is working, I will forgive any plot holes that are in there or any sort of questions. But if I start reminiscing too much about that, the movie isn't working for me. So while I do like a lot of the wonder, I love the production design, I love a lot of the filmmaking, I think Robertson is great. It just it tried to do way too much and never ever reached any of its potential for me. So I was very, very disappointed in the film. I think on a second viewing with less expectations, I would probably enjoy the film again. And I'm actually looking forward to trying to see it again with those lowered expectations. But and a lot of those questions sort of talked out. But as it stands now, yeah, was not really a fan.
Courtney?
For me, it went beyond disappointment. I just thought it was a total train wreck. I agree that it puts a lot of really good ideas out there, but it doesn't, it's got no payoff to any of them. And I just feel like, first of all, my biggest question is what happened? Like, there are so many good ideas in there. If they just stuck with one of them and developed it from there, other stuff would have happened organically rather be forced in. The other thing that occurred to me, I don't know who this movie is for. Like, it's supposed to be family friendly, but it's very violent. Even though there's not blood and guts, that doesn't mean your movie is not violent. There's laser guns, there's shooting, the decapitated head with the like electrical wires hanging down. I mean, that's sort of something out of like a horror movie, you know, with the decapitated real head with like, you know, veins hanging out. The girl gets hit, a girl gets hit by a truck and you're like, you have this visceral reaction and it's like, what is going on? And so it's funny because like some of that stuff is for kids and it feels like a serialized movie. But then at the same time, like you have these heavy-handed long stretches of just preachy dialogue of like either an expository villainous speech dump or like other heavy-handed lessons on like what you, that's mess, the film's message being shoved down your throat where kids are going to tune out, adults aren't going to care, and the movie's long. It's over 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes or something. So I don't know. Like, I was kind of expecting this inspirational film about dreaming and optimism, and while it's there, it just tries too hard to be, like, it doesn't quite get to the level where it thinks it is. I don't know if that makes sense, but It's just a huge mess. And I just felt like at a certain point, especially around the middle act, where it's just, look at all these gadgets we have. Gadgets, 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 tech, science mumbo jumbo, and all this stuff. And nothing like, well, we have to go to here to get to here to get to here, you know, with locations and stuff. And I was just like, why are they going all over on this adventure? And then the stuff in Paris, you feel like, that could have been built out a little more of what they're trying to say there. I don't know. I just thought it was a huge disaster. And I think that if this had the name of anybody but Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof, I think critics would be savaging it a whole heck of a lot more rather than giving it more credit than it actually is due.
If anything, it seems like the Bird side of it's what gets the credit, where people are happy to hark on Lindelof being.
Oh, you have to wait to what I've got to say.
Sure. I mean, but the thing with Lindelof is, like, I don't know how he keeps getting jobs. I don't understand. He's got this, like, trademark need to have characters just conceal this necessary details because he doesn't want audiences to know them yet, information yet. And it's so maddening and it's so cheap. It's such a cheap trick. And I hate that. And he does that in all of his films. And he does it here to even greater extent. And so the whole time, like, characters are screaming at each other. And I don't think Britt Robertson is that good. Somebody please explain how she is a big star, because I can't stand her in anything. I feel like the only, like, really good actor in this film is Rafe Cassidy.
Ooh,
so
yes.
If this movie exists just for her, then great. You know, we've discovered a huge new acting talent with her.
Well, strong words, and no, there was so not, wait, enough, wait, wait. There was not enough cheap
did,
trick.
Did Courtney like it? I'm trying to figure this out.
No, I
absolutely... I think the shoe was, oh, okay. You know, 9 out of 10.
She was a little
mixed.
She was a mig. No, she was like 6
look,
out of 10.
I gave John Carter a lot more credit than it probably actually deserves.
I like John Carter.
It was
sort of fun, but John this Carter, whole John, time, yeah. Like, I couldn't even get involved in the fun aspect of this movie because it just set me off on the wrong foot with the whole, like, I like the whole World's Fair sequence, the first, like, 10, 15 minutes of the film where it's taking you into this world that you don't, you know, normally see, the whole 1964 World's Fair stuff. But I hated that whole scene with young Frank and Nix, and it basically sums up the movie in a nutshell where I went, oh, here we go. This is what this movie is going to be, where you have these two characters talking, and he's – did mine cut out?
No, you're
nope.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I heard noises. Where you have this, like, young character giving this invention, this jetpack, which is essentially like a filmmaker delivering his baby in the studio. And the studio going, well, this doesn't work. And, like, why this doesn't work? And the kid goes, well, why can't it just be fun? And I'm like, that is what the filmmakers think of this movie. This is exactly what the filmmakers think. Why can't this movie just be fun? Why does it have to make sense? Because
there's no giant robot to fix this one, unfortunately.
Abe?
This is a weird movie. And I say that because, like what Courtney and Jermaine have mentioned before, there's a lot of weird concepts in this movie, a lot of different ideas, and some of them don't really conclusively get resolved. And that's a problem. However, I did like the movie, not a huge amount, but I thought that it was okay enough for me to go in there and say, like, okay, well, I see what they're trying to do here. I can give them credit. I mostly give Brad Bird credit. I blame Damian Lindelof a lot for the script and for the – I can kind of see in the movie which parts he probably had a larger play on, and that bothered me a lot because I feel as though without that, it's probably a pretty good action – movie for families, maybe?
Adventure would be the word.
Yeah, and I don't know how different it is from movies like Iron Giant, Incredibles, and Big Hero 6, and I mention those because two of them are Brad Bird properties, but they all deal with serious things, right? They all deal with serious topics, and they also have dark things that happen to them. I mentioned Big Hero 6 because that's a movie where it's like, hey, kids, you know, if you guys want to do something cool, become an engineer or go to study science and mathematics. And that's kind of what this movie is kind of saying, too. At the end there, it's kind of weird because instead of saying that explicitly, as they mentioned why Britt Robertson is special, they kind of say, like, okay, well, you go find you kids that are like Athena, go find more kids or go find more interesting people. But on the whole, it's not a... I don't want to pan it because I can see that there's some interesting and cool stuff there, but it does become bothersome when you have conflicting things that happen in the movie, like what you mentioned, Courtney. There's a huge battle sequence, which I didn't expect in a comic book store, and I liked it because then it kind of just reminded me of The World's End.
Yeah.
But and then that's where I thought, like, oh, well, it's that kind of a movie. It's going to be... There's going to be some cool twists and turns and science, sci-fi stuff here going on throughout. And then it kind of gets bogged down with these very quote-unquote dark thoughts and whatever else. But that gets resolved too because there's flickers of hope. But what happens to Hugh Laurie is just like, all right, I'm pretty sure Brad Bird didn't do that part. So what's the whole...
like two before Aaron gets his thing.
Yeah.
Like everybody's just shitting on Damon Lindelof. He got co-screenwriting credit with Brad Bird here.
I agree. So, yeah, like, I know.
And the director holds part of the problem too, because he controls the pacing. He controls what goes into the film. So it's really both of their faults.
But yeah. I see what you're saying, Jermaine, though. I mean, it's not as if like Brad Bird didn't see these pages.
Right.
Like,
right.
Well, it didn't edit the movie and didn't put it all together, and that didn't ask, like, you know, I mean, I could go on a tirade.
Yeah, I know. So when I was watching the screen credits, I was like, damn it, Brad Bird has a co-screenwriting credit with Damon. Mm-hmm. That's why I was like, ah, damn. If it was only Damon, I'd be like, it's all his fault. I blame him completely.
It's easy to blame Damon, and it makes sense because he does the same problem that happened with Lost and happened with Prometheus.
Lost, yeah.
I mean, right. It's the same problem over and over again where he can come up with great mysteries but no payoff, and it's tough. I mean,
but again, on the whole, it's got a lot of different concepts in it. Some of them I liked more than others. I didn't think the film worked, quote-unquote, as a whole, but I did like it to an extent.
I agree with you in terms of, like, the kind of overall feelings on it, where I feel like a lot of it doesn't work, but it's still enjoyable, like, enough for me to be like, well, I didn't dislike the experience. That doesn't give it a pass. That doesn't mean, like, hey, this is definitely worth seeing because I kind of liked it. But I mean, I think some of the things I was taking away from it, and I actually did get a chance to see it a second time just because I wanted to see the kind of the IMAX full frame version of this film, since it has, like, the scope's a little bit bigger in a giant IMAX screen versus how I originally saw it. And I think what I can take away is that it feels like this is the second movie. Like, it feels like there's a really good first movie that we see bits of, and then it leads right into the second movie where, like, suddenly Tomorrowland's in peril and they have to save it. Where it's like there's a whole movie I probably could have watched about young Frank Walker that maybe builds into this new girl, Casey Newton. But I didn't get that. I got this kind of hodgepodge of ideas that sets up a world that we then don't see for a large portion of the movie, and then comes back, and it's like, there's trouble afoot. I'm not sure why there's trouble afoot, and then it's kind of explained because we get monologuing, which is strange from the guy who wrote Incredibles, which comments on monologuing. So it's like, there's like this kind of weird narrative structure here that is uneven in its pacing. It kind of goes in and out of being like fun and exciting versus like now we get the preachy stuff. But there's a lot of ambition, and I do like the kind of, I like, there's a gee whiz tone to it that comes and goes, but when it's there, it really works. And I think that what aids that is the score by Michael Giacchino, who, you know, always does a terrific job. And that, I think that kind of helps propel me towards the kind of positive side on this thing, where I'm like, at least I feel like I'm involved in various ways. And yeah, I mean, Rafi Cassidy, she's very good. I think Clooney is fine. Robertson's more like, hey, here's the standard Disney live action character that you kind of follow along. It doesn't really matter how good she is, but it a lot of that stuff works. And I like there's a Disney-ness to it that, like, makes me want to, like, kind of look over certain things where if this wasn't like a movie produced by Disney, if it was like a Fox movie or something, I feel like I'd probably be harsher on what's happening. But because it's like, it is trying to emphasize, like, hey, this is fun. And again, that's not necessarily like, hey, that's the reason you should like this movie. But it's like, I was still able to kind of look past certain things to a point. It's really the third act where I start to get into, like, problems, where it just feels like everything's happening way too quickly. I really like the first two acts leading up to the ending, where they finally get to a certain place and suddenly you have all these explanations and whatnot instead of exploring the place more. And the biggest thing, I think, was my issue is that you have characters that are supposed to be very smart, and they're prided for, you know, having high scores in certain things and being able to think their way out of stuff. And the final solution is essentially, hey, just throw a bomb at it. Like,
it worked in Predator.
It works in most movies. But
she
had to figure out to throw the bomb at it. But, I mean, yeah, I guess I enjoyed the movie enough to, like, say, hey, it's worth seeing if you want to see something that's kind of visually spectacular and has some semblance of fun ideas. But on the whole, yes, I would say, given that it was probably my, you know, number two or three most anticipated movie of the summer, it's disappointing because, yeah, it's
right. On that regard, I agree with you.
I mean, coming up,
I did think that it was going to be a better movie for more accessible audiences.
It's not even like accessible. Like, I can see audiences going to this. It's not about accessibility. It's just it didn't deliver on being as good as it could have been. Like, that's the way I look at it. Yeah.
Can we also talk about, like, what their end game was? Like, that's the thing that, like, truly bothers me the most. It feels like first of all, I feel like this whole thing is a rapture parable. And like, if let's say, try to make it a spoil, like not spoilery.
If the plan succeeds, yes. What happens to the people that aren't
involved? What happens to our earthly reality if, like, all of the dreamers and thinkers and intelligent people get swept away? Like, what happens to us on Earth if we're not qualified? Like, our world turns into like this perilous, hellish place with like all the jerks running around.
Well, that's it's what already happened in the movie, right? Is they took all the great people and then something bad, and then like it, then, well, I mean, they disappeared from Tomorrowland, so we'll just say that. I mean, we just right. But yeah, I mean, we saw what happened, sort of, and they're just repeating history again. They don't do anything different. They're like, oh well, we saved the world, let's do it again.
It's just, yeah,
so
it's,
I agree,
clear.
There's no, you never know what the end game is, and you never know why, you know, like,
yeah.
And Hugh Laurie is run. Why is he okay with the plot that he's doing? It's like, is Tomorrowland really that great of a place? It looks like crap. You know, like there's no more anything going on.
And what's weird with that is just you have. I think that all of us were kind of excited or very curious to find out, well, what did we do? And then when you find out, it's kind of very much at the end of the movie that you find out that George Clooney created something. It's like, that was it? I thought that it was going to be something amazingly awful. And then also the monologue from Hugh Laurie is pretty much just jammed in there at the end of the movie.
Well, it's funny, like I saw it the second time, I was kind of looking more at that, just kind of trying to figure out like what is his MO here? And you can really, it really feels like there's like another 20 minutes of this movie because there's a lot of edits. You can really feel a lot of cutting around how he's saying things, how the movie's presenting a lot of information in those long monologue scenes, and it's like, it feels like there's a clearer version of this movie, but they cut it down because it probably wasn't working that way either, and this is kind of like the lesser
of two evils,
about
that,
I guess.
Yeah, what sucked about that is just that he says it at the end of the movie, he's like, he gets this huge monologue, this huge spiel about like, yo man, we gave you your chance, but you guys didn't want it, and then we just were like, it's over. But then, like what you said, Jermaine, it's like, what happened to Tomorrowland? It still looks like a piece of shit. Like, nothing's fixed here, so you guess you guys just live in your little nuclear bunker for the rest of your life kind of thing?
And, also, you can't go back to the real world because something happened there, you know?
Yeah, but what's weird is he says, like, it's not going to happen to us. It's like, what if it didn't happen to you guys, then what happened here? Like, why is your place so gray and trapped?
They had all had the weekend off, Abe. That's what it was.
Oh, okay, all right. It's closed. All right,
They have certain times.
It's the financial district in San Francisco on Saturday. Got it.
The other side of Tomorrowland is a boom right now. Like, they're having a blast. Like, we were on the wrong side. We came in through entrance B.
Yeah, but those are some of the problems. And what's funny, Aaron, you said that you liked the third act more. I actually liked the second act.
No, I said I didn't like the third act.
Oh,
said,
you didn't?
No, I said it was too rushed. Yeah. No,
yeah.
I said like the first two acts.
I didn't really like the first act at all because the way that they enter the story is not the way that it is the way they end up, but it's also just like this play on light. And
the way they enter the story is kind of this like, hey, look how clever screenwriters we are. We're doing this thing.
Like, let me go fourth dimension here and then also give you two backstories just to tell you who these people are.
Oh, the wraparound device?
Yeah. And it's like
terrible.
It was
terrible.
Like, all right, well, you've told me about George Clooney and then you've told me about Casey. And it's like, man, this is not a great way to enter things.
And she keeps interrupting him. So off the bat, I'm already like, I already hate her because she keeps interrupting George Clooney. Let the man talk.
I am very upset with you.
I get it. You're angry. I understand. But have you ever seen this before? Does it look weird?
Don't touch it.
Why are you yelling at me?
Not while you're driving, Dad. It's dangerous. Just pull over.
Okay. I swear to God, Case, if you're on drugs.
I'm not on drugs. All will be explained as soon as you touch this pen.
Not working?
Casey, stop it!
I don't understand why. I mean, that was obviously added in there later, or if not, like, they made the conscious decision to have this wraparound. And I actually think how does it not work perfectly fine just at the end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, having it at the beginning, it's completely jarring. It's like,
and it takes away the stakes. Not as if I thought, you know, these people are definitely going to die at some point, but at the same time, it's like, well, I already know everything's going to probably work out in some way.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I know better than you. It's like, how? What? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then it has this great, I mean, then I love the next part. You know, if it had just started with young Frank getting off, you would have been so interested to be like, well, who is this kid and like where is he going?
That's
you know?
It feels like it's been focus-shopped or like workshopped around and like focus groups. Like because it's like you could easily see it starting with that, but instead it has this wraparound stuff, and it's like I'm curious what the you got to see what the screenplay is, what the original screenplay looks like, and just kind of understand some kind of what they want to do with the backstories on both on both characters. God, hey, when
yeah, so right at the literally frame one, you have all these like questions and not in a good thing. Like at that point, you should be easing into the film. They shouldn't be like, you know, if the film had started with her like walking around Tomorrowland, you'd be like, what the hell's going on? It's like this is a bad idea. Let's do a different way. Yeah, it just from there it just keeps piling up. And again, I agree, guys, that it does have this sense of wonder, but and which is cool. And Giacchino's score is one of his best in a while. But it's yeah, like the more I think about it, I guess seeing it again probably helped. The more I think about it, the less I like it, and that makes me feel so bad because I love everybody involved with it. But I just oh man, it drops the ball.
What's kind of like back and forth is that you get a couple, you get some lines of Clooney where he's like, "Can't you just watch this? Can't you just believe in it and have fun?" And it's like, yeah, those are fun things to say and like a way to like wink at the audience, like get it, see what we're doing. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but can't the movie like also be better structured? Can't the movie have a better script?
If you have to have a character explain and tell somebody in such a condescending voice, why can't you just enjoy the movie? Like that is a huge problem with your material and your script. Like maybe the filmmakers can excuse this, but me as an audience member, I cannot. I cannot excuse it. I think the movie would have been just way better if they just stuck with Frank's story. And you see this man who's been shown Shangri-La and Xanadu or whatever, and he gets kicked out for some reason or another, as we find out later in the film, this that's it kind of thing.
Yeah, and
his invention. And if they just stuck with him.
Or either way, they could have just stuck with her story and then him and not have George Clooney in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, or just not get to him until like a good chunk of the way into the movie. And you're like, oh, that's cool. George Clooney's in this movie.
He doesn't get to him until a chunk later on in the film. It takes about 40, 45 minutes to actually get to them meeting,
which is why I feel like it's been edited like in a weird way where they like we got to show that Clooney right up top or else people are gonna walk out because that's what people do.
And it also gives you like weird character arcs for characters that I didn't feel were necessary, because the George Clooney character, you do get his beginning story, and then again he drops off and he's a grouch now, but you don't know why until again the third act, and it's not as cohesive. I didn't feel that I did like the, you know, the interactions between he and Athena and, you know, what happens there. And I loved Athena's character arc. Her character arc was, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. And then she, again, that actress just fills the screen whenever she's on there. And I enjoyed that a lot. But one thing that Courtney brought up, too, and I'm sure all of us thought about it, is just I hated the over the head beating of, man, we're bad people. Because at one point, Catherine Hahn is just watching a television screen of like a nuclear explosion going off over and over again. I was like, I get it. Like we did this to ourselves.
It makes sense. And when you get a reveal about what's going on with her and Keegan,
right? which is very interesting. There again, that's a cool scene later, especially with like the sci-fi, like the little time shrink bubble. Which is cool, but
a lot of little neat gadgets.
Yeah, but I just thought I've seen like that's all George Clooney is taking a look at in the monitors. It's just, you know, disaster, and then I see it again later. And
it's everywhere. There's billboards for like, you know, disaster movies and everything.
Yeah, it gets a little bit over the top. I'm pretty sure even The Rock's was like, I don't want to see this movie because San Andreas
is
much lighter.
That when they go to that comic shop, it is nice that Disney has like they own so much where it's like they can show Star Wars stuff. They can show like there's a bunch of Iron Man. Like every Brad Bird movie is referenced in that comic shop.
But Star Wars and stuff is really cool. But at the same time, like so logistically, did the people in Tomorrowland have robots stationed there to find Athena? Like that made no sense, and they just run this store. Like why are they there? Because they have. I buy the agents.
I never even thought about that. That's a good point.
You completely buy the agents who get dispatched. Okay, because we've seen that in the Matrix to everything, you know. But like so, Key and Han are just sitting there being weird, and putting up ads for stuff on eBay, searching for it, which is a whole other thing. But like, yeah. Makes no sense. But at the same, like, it's a great sequence on its own. But when you step back and look at it, it makes no sense.
Yeah, there's a is a long leash apparently lashed to Tomorrowland of like how to find the people that they need to find.
Yeah, exactly. So how many other stores are this? Are they just this one store in Houston of all places that put up? And the only thing they're doing is like putting stuff on eBay. Like, how are they trying to find Athena? If you're robots, why aren't you out there looking?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably filming their sketch show, Key and Han, as well. But I mean, it's.
And then what's also weird is, again, you get the next sequence where these guys show up in a black van, and then they just evaporate these police officers. I'm like, what happened here? Like, why did this happen?
I could say, and I know, Corey, you pointed this out too in terms of kind of the violence of the movie. Mm-hmm. I would say, yes, evaporating police officers into dust is a little violent. At the same time, I think there's a lot of kids' movies that have that, older kids' movies that have that kind of darker edge that it didn't really rub me the wrong way in terms of.
It didn't rub me the wrong way, but that's kind of weird. Like, I would think
I was
that
just
like, put him
hey,
to sleep
that guy, he had a wedding ring on. His wife is probably expecting him to come home tonight, and she's not going to have him come home.
Now she's going to get a workman compensation check.
I hope she's got life insurance on her husband.
She was waiting for this day.
Yeah. Jetpacks are cool.
Jetpacks are cool.
That big Warner was fun. Like that kind of his like, hey, here's that invitation to Tomorrowland video, essentially, which is
I did like that. And even though the George Clooney explains what it was later, I was like, that's still a pretty cool invite. Like, you know, it sends you on this
best
this,
Evite ever.
Exactly. Best interactive Evite ever. Thank you. I forget.
That said, we have a whole movie about Tomorrowland that largely does not take place in Tomorrowland, which I think is part of the disappointment right there. I didn't really know anything about this movie going in beyond like, you know, basic stuff from the teaser trailer and the later trailer, which still doesn't give away too much. I didn't read up on it. I just kind of knew it's like, all right, cool. There's a Brad Bird movie called Tomorrowland. I hope there's a lot of this Tomorrowland in it. And yeah, we really, there's not much of that. And when you get there, like you guys have said, it's a really shitty place. Like what's going on? Like, there's nothing here.
Well, the reality one. Yeah. But the commercials are still great.
So, disappointing, I guess is the kind of key word here. Which is a shame. Apparently audiences weren't too keen on seeing it.
Kind of mixed,
It's kind of mixed. Like 50-50. Movie made, what, 32 mil, somewhere around there?
It was number one, but just by a little bit.
Just by a little bit. Probably.
I think it's going to have a huge drop off.
Oh, it's a bomb. I mean, luckily, Avengers Earth is 400 million, and they have Star Wars, and Cinderella was a hit, Inside Out will be a hit.
Thank God for Inside Out. We barely have to wait for less than a month to kind of cleanse our Disney palates of this mess to go on to, like, from what I hear is just absolute perfection. So,
knock on wood,
Oh, my God. Can't wait.
Yeah, so, Tomorrowland, I guess, get to a rating real quick. When should people go and see this movie? Jermaine, when would you say people should see Tomorrowland?
I think it's a beautiful movie. I saw it in the Dolby Vision, I think, and that was great. But, I mean, as a movie, I mean, it's a – I think On Demand would be fine.
Courtney?
Saturday when it's on cable on the Disney Channel and they're doing laundry.
I like how much leeway we give our guests, Abe, about how, how people should go see this movie.
That's how – yeah, it's an open-ended question.
Abe, your thoughts?
Probably on DVD because I agree with Courtney that it is kind of long actually. But yeah, it's one of those movies where I think you should see it. You don't have to rush out and see it right away.
Yeah, that's why I'd say like a matinee or a dollar theater. I had fun. I want to communicate this more. I did have fun with this movie. I just
I didn't live up to what it could have been. I had questions.
Yes, questions in a like a kind of way.
Yeah,
that's spelled NUGH by the way. But okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how I spelled Nia.
All right.
Is that another question? I just opened up the box on that one. All right, that's our review for Tomorrowland. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor this week, first off, before we get into more fun. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast, audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can choose a book to download for free. You can start listening. It's just that easy. You can go there. You can check out the service. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book that you downloaded for free. So go to audibletrial.com/podcast. Be a winner.
Read.
Or listen. Audible trial. Nailed that one. I think that if they're listening this week, because I feel like every like 5 weeks, they're like, that was good. Like
Seats over at Audible.
They do a nice thumbs up at the commuter monitor. Like, that was a good one.
They all have that smile like that one main villain guy in the black.
Exactly. Those are creepy, right? I'd watch.
You mean the Jim Carrey smile?
The Jim Carrey smile.
That weird. Yeah. He was great on Letterman's last show. I don't know why I'm segueing into Letterman's
Jim Carrey.
Last show.
Yeah, he was.
He was no Bill Murray popping out of a cake, that's for sure.
That was nice.
Day before. Let's move on to Out Now Feedback.
Feedback.
This is where we go over the various questions and answers that we received on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we have a number of questions we asked, and you listeners answered them, and then you provided us some questions.
Yeah, first question we asked everybody is, does anyone have any favorite sci-fi films from before the 1960s? And Manish writes, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Tyler writes, The Original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Philip has 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And lastly, Jorah says, Them Giant Ants, baby.
Them. Giant Ants, baby.
Oh, Them.
Them, the movie, yes.
Gotcha.
Courtney Jermaine, you feel free to, you know, provide any response if you have any thoughts, too. Do you have any favorite pre-60s sci-fi films?
Yeah, The Day the Earth Stood Still is pretty good.
Yeah.
That one's great.
I kind of generate towards not really sci-fi, but like the Universal Monster stuff is sort of my favorite stuff from sort of that era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throw Metropolis out there. That's just,
yeah, sure.
That's just good fun. Mm-hmm. That's what people say when they watch Metropolis. That was good fun.
It's good fun.
Yeah. Favorite inventors in film besides Doc Brown. Manish,
that's the beginning and the end of the list, isn't it?
There's some good picks here.
I mean, he's invented things from like 1885 all the way through 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Manish has Maurice from Beauty and the Beast.
Crazy old Maurice.
Crazy old Maurice.
He's always good for a laugh.
Anna has Data from The Goonies. Willy Wonka from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And Q from the James Bond films.
Good one, too.
Uh-huh.
Justin has LOL. That was my first choice, Doc Brown. He has Caractus Potts. Caractus? Is that a Harry Potter character or something? I don't know.
I don't recall.
Caractus?
I'll let you know. I'll just shout it out randomly.
Fair enough. He has Wayne Szalinski from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm.
Professor Philip Brainard.
Oh, no, it's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
He's played by Dick Van Dyke.
No, it is Dick. Oh, God. Okay, yeah. Gee whiz. I just assume everything's Harry Potter.
Golly.
Randall Peltzer. More from the movie as a whole. Some of my favorites as a kid. Lastly, Philip has Flint Lockwood from Flint Lockwood? Of the Meebles, which is an amazing choice. I fully support that. Spray on shoes.
Anakin Skywalker invented C-3PO and a pod racer.
That Tony Stark guy seems to be pretty popular.
Yeah.
A lot of inventors. Doc Brown, tumbling down the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next question we asked everyone is, what is your favorite live-action Disney movie hero or heroes? Jason writes Captain Jack Sparrow. Friend of the show, Maxwell writes The Rocketeer.
Boom.
Richard writes Wayne Szalinski. Sorry. Yeah, friend of the show, Mark Hoban writes, I'll resist the temptation to say Han Solo and go with Tyler, the biologist, in Never Cry Wolf. It's a great film. That's what he writes. Jason writes, Condor Man, enough said. David writes, Jason Robards in Something Wicked This Way Comes. It seems like a stretch, but hey, he saved his son and friend, not to mention the whole town from their Faustian packs, all while having a heart attack.
Courtney, can you guess mine? Favorite live-action Disney hero?
Yeah.
There it is. Troy, mother effing Bolton, son.
Boom!
Won the state championship for the East High Wildcats twice.
I think he also goes to Berkeley later.
He does go to Berkeley, and since then he's become an actor by the name of Zac Efron. But before that, Troy Bolton.
Yeah. Mike writes, well, Disney owns Marvel, so almost every other Marvel thing. Philip writes, John Carter. Yeah, I know. I said it. Hashtag Texas forever.
Wow.
Yes. Forever. I can't wait for True Detective 2.
Friday Night Lights. What are you talking about?
Friday Night Lights, yes, but I was very surprised to see him in the teasers for True Detective 2, and I was like, whoa, I'm really excited.
So basically, you just haven't followed any news regarding True Detective 2, True Detective Season 2.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Let's see. What ride slash park would you like to see a movie based on or inspired by? And I had an example of Big Thunder Mountain starring The Rock. Justin has, I would definitely like Kevin Smith to elaborate on Mr. Toad's wild ride he mentioned in his movies. Maxwell has a Space Mountain sci-fi romp in the style of a 1950s G-Wiz adventure. Philip has one of those spinning rides that use centrifugal force to make everyone stick to the wall, inspired by Spider-Man, of course. And Anna has the Matterhorn bobsleds.
Which so the Jamaican bobsled team?
Yeah, it'd be a cool running spinoff. It'd be a sequel where they have to, you know, attack the...
As long as you get Leon back and Dougie Doug.
Yeah, and Malik Yoba.
And yeah, the, nobody can name for a third guy. Can fourth guy? Can
the rich guy? The rich guy.
Junior.
Junior, exactly. Junior Benoit.
Yeah, Space Mountain is the obvious one here, and that's something they've been trying to do, I think, for a long time. But you know, even though Space Mountain does cameo in Tomorrowland,
yeah, there's
was
a guy
there
walks.
Some kind of like Jungle Cruise movie or something.
That was in development, but I don't think it's ever moved forward. Yeah. But that would be good too. It was supposed to have Hanks and Alan. So Toy Story reimagined, yeah.
It'd just be a really slow movie about Hanks narrating things that he sees on a
and
Jungle
doing
Cruise.
Really bad jokes. It'd be funny. Exactly. I'd see the shit out of that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there's a Tiki Room movie that's – I know that's been written, the Tiki Room movie.
Yeah,
but...
it's the Michael Bay Birds remake.
I just wish somebody would make like some Tinkerbell movies. I've never seen that movie.
Yeah, there's not enough of those.
Wait, it's a face? Very little not known property.
Next, we move to questions you guys asked us, and Manish asks, if you had a pin that could take you anywhere, where would you go? And the answer is easy. I'd go to the dark, deep seas and figure out what's there.
I'd just say the bathroom. I mean, if you got to go and you have a pin that's just like, oh, I'm in there. Like, that's that just makes things simple, I think.
Is it the bathroom from Jurassic Park where the lawyer gets killed?
Why would I want to go there?
Well, there's no T-Rex there anymore.
So I just want to go to this toilet in the ground with no shack around it anymore?
Well, presumably pre-Tyrannosaurus attack.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would want to see Carnation Cafe, the movie.
Hmm.
But I will guarantee you it will be better than Tomorrowland.
Okay.
It'll be more coherent.
I'd like a pin that just – I just want to be able to take me from New York to L.A. and back. I mean, just – I need – that flight kills me every time. So that's all I need, something quick like that.
Nightcrawler. You need Nightcrawler.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
He can only go where he, you know.
That he's seen.
But then again, it is so quick. So, I mean, it still gets you there a lot faster. He just keeps looking out in front of him. He's like, all right, let's go there. The BAM thing. Maxwell asks, what would you invent if you had unlimited resources? A pin that would make us go anywhere, I'd imagine.
Teleportation.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Teleportation.
And lastly, Philip asks, what's the last score you heard that motivated you to buy it? I'd really say the Mad Max track. That was a fantastic score.
Yeah, the Mad Max score. I bought the It Follows score, I think, before. I buy scores all the time, so it's like, it's just, which ones didn't I like? But yeah, Mad Max was the last one that I purchased.
I haven't bought one in a while. I'm trying to think. I mean, honestly, the Tomorrowland score is really good. I mean, the movie aside, I think that Giacchino crushes that pretty well. So,
did you notice his titles on the soundtrack for Tomorrowland?
No.
The titles are all puns.
I remember reading about that a while ago. Yeah. That's funny.
Giacchino, he does that, right? He does that like on a lot of his
soundtracks.
Yeah,
I think he does that a lot, but like these ones are especially funny.
I will be sure to check those out then.
My last score, I would say Mad Max Fury Road, but also I think the last score that I bought before that was Gone Girl on vinyl.
Hmm. On vinyl?
Mm-hmm. Because I'm a hipster.
That's right.
It sounds warmer. I'm insufferable.
All right, I think that's out now. Feedback. No, what time is it?
Oh, Aaron, I believe that it's time for some games. I can't tell you how excited I am, but that was very much from Tomorrowland.
Yeah, that was.
I could tell.
Yeah, that was a scene when Tomorrowland began. Of course, it was very light. Completely recreated that. By the way, one of the more fun opening Disney titles I've seen in a while for that Tomorrowland one. I like that. Mm-hmm. The fun Disney logo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the jetpack that launches at you.
I was surprised that there wasn't a nuclear explosion after it, but yeah, no.
That's after the credits. That's
a giant
like title card that reads, "Look at what you people have done."
Says signed Damon. I have a game for you guys. It is called Tomorrow Today.
All right.
I wrote it out exaggerated like that too. Today.
Like goofy capitalized characters and uncapitalized characters.
Sure. Yeah. Basically, I have a list of movies here that have the word tomorrow in them, and I'm going to provide a vague description of them, and you have to guess what movie I'm referring to in order to buzz in. Just shout out your name. So, example, if I said something, A would be like, Abe, and then he'd say the answer.
Yes. Abe, the answer.
Exactly. So, yeah. There you go. I have a number of these here, because there's only so many movies that have the words tomorrow in them, which is already narrowed down to begin with. But
Jermaine's going to kill at this game. I can already feel it.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
I don't know. I'm really good at, like, you know, a yesterday, but not tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot more yesterday titles, let me tell you. So here we go. Here's the first one. A paleoclimatologist journeys across America during a new ice age.
And that's the end of...
There goes that segment.
Courtney.
Yes.
The
Day After Tomorrow?
The Day After Tomorrow is the correct answer. Courtney's on the board.
I'm trying to
think of the name of the title.
I thought paleoclimatologist gave it away.
Yeah, no, it did. I saw the cover. I saw the statue delivery all frozen over. I was like, what's the name of that movie?
The Day After... yeah.
The Day After Tomorrow.
Day After Tomorrow. You know, I call that Tuesday. Here's the next one. A major and a special forces warrior are on a hell of a time crunch to stop an alien invasion. Yep.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow is the correct answer.
See, Courtney, you built me up too much. I'm just...
Listen, I always lose at these games. Always. So just because I got the first one doesn't mean anything.
Here's the next one.
Your week.
These either get more vague or whatever. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Bond. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Bond.
Courtney.
Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies?
Tomorrow Never Dies is the correct answer.
Michelle
Yeoh. Yeah, there you go.
That was the last pun I have. Everything else is just pretty straightforward. This movie took guerrilla filmmaking to a happy place.
Jermaine.
Yep.
World of Tomorrow. Is that what it's called?
That's not what it's called.
Oh, yeah, I forget what it's called. I don't remember. I don't care.
I can see the poster in my head.
I lost it. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, but I got it wrong. You're right.
Yeah. Either of you? Nope.
Oh, I can see the poster in my head, and I hated the movie. I trashed it because it was so misogynistic.
The film is Escape from Tomorrow.
Yes.
There it is.
I say we give Jermaine the point.
Anyway.
I don't deserve the point. I don't want it.
Here's the next one. High school seniors go a little too far, and Han eats a lot.
Abe.
Yes.
Better Luck Tomorrow.
Better Luck Tomorrow. Good one, the correct answer. What happened to that, Han? Anyway.
He's still in Tokyo in my mind.
Yeah, sure. Well, he is. They brought his body back.
No, they brought his
body back. Until we find out that it wasn't his body in Furious 8.
Michelle Rodriguez style.
I like to think that every one of these Furious movies should end with Eva Mendes sexily walking towards someone with a file that says, "Guess who's still alive?" And then I open the folder up. Next one. Gangsters, Guns, and Doves. It also has a sequel.
Abe.
Jermaine.
A Better Tomorrow.
A Better Tomorrow is the correct answer. Abe, did you know that?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, curious. I was waiting to see if...
I didn't know how big your John Woo knowledge is.
Oh, it's extensive.
Okay. Here's the last one.
A Better Tomorrow too.
Here we go. Stylized retro adventure featuring a pilot, the Goop, and one-eyed Jolie. Retro adventure featuring a pilot, the Goop, and one-eyed Jolie.
Oh shit!
Stylized.
Jermaine.
Yeah.
Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow?
Yes, that is correct.
I think
Jermaine won.
I got two.
He's got two. Almost three. Yeah. Courtney's got two. Abe's got two. So that's why I have this fancy tiebreaker question.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. This is actually this is a fun one because I saw this. The alternate title for this movie was Tomorrow Space World. And I have a description here, and you can try to guess it. This sci-fi film concerns the fate of the world in the palm of a man and a pregnant woman. This is a sci-fi
what was the
film.
Alternate title?
Tomorrow Space World. Sci-fi film concerning the fate of the world in the palm of a man and a pregnant woman. They have to get to a destination called the Tomorrow.
Oh,
hey. Yeah?
Damn it! The one movie. Oh man, I'm gonna hate myself. Damn, what is that movie called? Courtney and Jermaine are on my heels. They're nipping away, but I don't want to say anything because then they get it.
This is the part where I look up the movie so I can read the cast from the bottom of the list and go upwards.
No. It's oh my gosh,
doing it.
Okay, all right, but
I'm gonna start reading cast.
The pregnant woman bit is throwing me off.
Oh, it. Oh man.
I'm gonna start reading cast members. God, there's not many.
Don't get this wrong.
Okay. Danny Houston, Charlie Hunnam, Michael Caine, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Julianne Moore, Clive Owen.
Jesus.
Really?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Children of Men is the correct
damn
answer.
Damn it!
Jesus.
Who said that, Jermaine?
Yes. Jermaine did.
Jermaine wins tomorrow. Today.
I'm thinking of all these drab colors, Clive Owen running around, and then like Julianne Moore getting shot in the car, and I was like, what is the name of that movie? Oh, good job, Jermaine.
That was a lot of work to get there.
Yeah, it's one of the most famous movies ever. It was the Tomorrow-World that threw us off.
Yes.
Well, that was the alternate. That's why it didn't matter.
Right. Okay. The pregnant woman. I was like, how many movies are there pregnant women? It's like, all right. Yeah. All right.
There's
good
Junior
job.
And all right. Moving on now. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray, DVD this week. And this is a bad lineup. There's no other way to put it. First up, we have Seventh Son.
No.
Then we have The Loft.
No.
The Loft. Oh, my God.
Then we have, I believe this was a History Channel series, The Sons of Liberty.
Maybe?
We have Spike Lee's Kickstarter film, The Sweet Blood of Jesus.
I heard mixed things.
We have a documentary titled Ballet 422, which is about the New York Ballet behind the scenes. Mm. And lastly, Ray Donovan Season 2.
I heard that it was a decent show.
Compared to last week, the last couple weeks of DVDs and Blu-rays that have come out, it's a little lackluster. But yeah, that's what's happening. Now we have Extremely Cool. These are movies that are on Netflix that we'd really like to recommend. And there's a few here that I just randomly noticed and I wanted to point out. The Killer is currently streaming on Netflix, for speaking of John Woo.
Oh, you should watch it.
Let's see. There's a documentary series called Chef's Table that's now on Netflix, which I've heard a lot of good things about.
I think that's
I watched
the guys who made
one of those.
Zero Dreams of Sushi, right?
Yes. I watched one of them. I watched the one about the sushi restaurant in L.A., and it, of course, made me hungry, but I want to go to there.
Nice. And lastly, I saw Girlhood is now streaming on Netflix.
Oh,
it's so good.
I've heard a lot of good things about it, yeah.
Yeah.
And a friend of the show, Jeff Nelson, he is quoted on the Blu-ray DVD cover of that film from DVD Talk, which was neat for him to see. I was talking to him earlier this week about it.
Congratulations.
But yeah, I saw that Girlhood streaming, and I want to see that movie, so it's on my queue. I know that. All right, next week's show. Next week, we're talking about San Andreas. San Andreas. Of course, the spinoff from the popular video game series Grand Theft Auto.
Exactly.
Dwayne DeWalt Johnson stars as
CJ,
a former convict who is racing his way against Officer Tenpenny, voiced by Samuel L. Jackson, stopping an earthquake in the process. No, that's something. This is the big earthquake movie starring Dwayne, The Rock Johnson, and Carlo Gugino, and there's a lot of big fancy names as I get larger. Alexandra Daddario.
Daddario.
I think that's how it's. Daddario.
Drop the bass.
Yeah. So yeah, that's happening. Are you guys excited for San Andreas?
Nah. No.
I'm foregoing press screenings to see it in 4DX.
Ooh.
Wow.
He wants to get punched in the butt and blown in the face.
I've heard that is the way to see it, Jermaine.
I mean, if you're gonna see it, that's the way to see it, right? I mean, I'm not gonna go to the Grove like an idiot.
like a common person.
Yeah, I'm gonna pay like a rube $24 to see it when I could see it for free.
Well,
yeah. So I guess I am kind of looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. I like The Rock in movies, so like that makes me want to see things. And I've said this from the start since we've seen the teaser, I just hope it's more fun than the trailer looks. Like, I hope, as much as there's disaster and stuff going around, some of these movies tend to have more fun than others. So I'd like to think that a tearful version of California Dreamin' isn't going to set me up for, like, this really depressing movie about an earthquake.
I mean, that's all I want to hear is just, like, all the variations of California Dreamin'.
I'm just saying that I hope that after Paul Giamatti's monologue, he makes a fart joke. Like, that's all I want to hear in these movies, right?
Why would he do that?
To lighten the mood. He'd even say it
Paul
himself.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, big fat liar's Paul
Fred
Giamatti.
Claus's
what are you talking about?
Brother, Santa.
Okay. But yeah, that's happening. Last thing we do here before we wrap up completely, what should people go see now and what do you plan to see next? Jermaine, what would you say people should go see in theaters right now?
I mean, Mad Max, right? Yeah. I'm also one of the few people who likes Pitch Perfect 2. That's only because I'm a huge fan of Pitch Perfect 1, and I overlook the flaws. And coming up next, I mean, I don't know. I hope Inside Out lives up to it, and I hope Jurassic World lives up to it. Those are the next two ones I'm really looking forward to because I've already seen Entourage, and I can't talk about that. But so those would be my films. I'm just going to list the entire list.
Courtney, what should people go see now?
I'm going to echo the same thing Jermaine said, Mad Max. Fury Road is perfection. And the two things that I'm looking forward to, Inside Out and Jurassic World.
Abe?
Since Jermaine and Courtney have already said Mad Max, I'll say go see Ex Machina. It's been making another marketing push for whatever reason, but it's a good movie. You should go see it. And next week, it's going to be San Andreas.
Yeah, Mad Max. I would say Abe and I actually did interview a director for the movie Teacher of the Year, which is on iTunes, and I'd say people should check that out if they want to. What I'm going to see, I'm seeing Aloha next, actually.
You're going to Hawaii.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too. Have very low hopes.
Yeah, it's a little sad. I'd like to be more excited about Cameron Crowe movies, but we'll see. Yeah. Obviously looking forward to plenty of movies that are coming out. You know, in the rest of the summer.
But, Hot Pursuit 2.
Hot Pursuit 2. Oh, they already made it, yeah.
I'm seeing Spy.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, me too.
I forgot when I'm seeing Spy. Is that, when is that?
Thursday.
I think it's Thursday. It's Thursday. All media.
I think I'm also seeing it then.
Did you see it already, Jermaine?
No, I'll be there on Thursday.
Woohoo!
But yeah, with all that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find my written movie reviews as well as at ranthollywood.com and on my official Facebook page, facebook.com/thecodeofzeke. You can also find me on Twitter at aaronsps4. Abe?
You can find more of Aaron's work over at ranthollywood.com as well as twitter.com/aaronsps4. And if you want to find things just for yourself, go to google.com.
Thanks, Abe. Courtney Howard, where can people find more of your work online?
You can find me at on Twitter at Lula Mae Bell, and also on veryaware.com.
And Jermaine Lucier.
You can find my writing on slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Jermaine Lucier.
Really got these Slash Film boys on here. We got between you and
Angie
and Ethan Anderton. That's fun to say. getting all
Who's
you guys
a minority report, right?
Yeah, it's a combination. Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible.
John Anderson
from Minority Report. Right. Regardless, yeah, no, good to have you guys on. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes, Audio Boom, and at Stitcher.
Find old episodes over at SoundCloud as well as Podomatic and HHWLOD.
You can email us your thoughts of Tomorrowland or other things at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And lastly, you can find us on Tumblr, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. So yeah, we've completed another episode, guys. We've done it.
Did it.
We've gone to Tomorrowland and back.
We're going to 194.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, until next time we talk about San Andreas, that's going to do it. So long.
And goodbye.
Crazy old Maurice?
Crazy old Maurice.
He's always good for a laugh.